Welcome back in, everybody. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Well, you might have heard Raleigh talking about it last night at this time. The Indianapolis 500 is back on WGN Radio airwaves this weekend. We're very excited about it. Of course, WGN Radio has a great history with the Indianapolis 500, first broadcasting parts of the race back in 1924. Haven't carried it. I don't know how much we've carried it since then or when the last time was the races aired here on WGN, but we're carrying coverage like all day on Sunday. It's very exciting. So to get a little insight on the race this year and some of the history of the Indianapolis 500, Nathan Brown is the motorsports insider for the Indy Star down in Indianapolis, IndyStar.com. Hey, Nathan, how are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate you jumping on the show. So how long have you been covering motorsports in Indianapolis?
Yeah, so I took over this beat back in October of 2019, so about a year and a half or so, but I actually grew up in central Indiana, have been coming to the Indy 500 for a good portion of my life. I think my first race was back in the early 2000s, maybe 2001 or so. So I know a good amount of the history and the, you know, the pageantry and the traditions that surrounds the Indianapolis 500 in particular, and have always been a pretty big fan and had a lot of interest in the IndyCar series. And luckily enough, about a year and a half ago, was able to curtail all that knowledge and passion into a job that I've been really excited to live out the last year and a half or so.
Well, and you've had a really interesting run since you've been on board, if I have this correctly. Not only did we have the pandemic, and so the first race ever in front of no fans, I assume the first, you know, there have been years the Indy 500 hasn't been held due to the wars, but I don't believe prior to last year was ever held outside of the traditional Memorial Day weekend, at least not unless it was because of rain delay, things like that.
Even with in the years that they did have rain delays, it actually had never, ever been held outside of the month of May. Even their worst rain delay, I think, was back in 1986. Where they basically had to push it back 6 days. The race fell on May 31st. So it was a very, very unusual month of August and not May that we did go through last year.
And Roger Penske bought the track. That's just within the last year and a half too, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah, that was about a month and a half after I started my beat.
So you've covered a lot of the new stuff. Is that very interesting. So let's talk a little bit about the race this year and what fans can expect. People will be listening here on WGN Radio in Chicago, but so many Midwesterners make the drive down. My family's been going off and on since the early 80s, and we haven't gone now in about 8 years because my sons were playing baseball, and of course, Memorial Day weekend, we always had a tournament or something going on. So we're very excited, a big group of us coming down to go to the race again this weekend. What can people expect if they are traveling down to Indianapolis? We know that they're not selling all of the seats, that there is going to be some spaced seating. Is that only within the grandstands? Are they still selling the infield like they normally would? What should we expect?
Yeah, so they have closed off the infield for this year. So all of the seating is either in the suites or the grandstands, and that amounts to 135,000, which is about 40% of IMS's capacity, which roughly comes out to about 350,000 on a complete sellout like we had back in 2016. Granted, when you don't have anyone in the infield, these grandstands are going to be on average, you know, per section more than 50% full, somewhere around like 60% or so on average. So your more highly desired ones in the turns probably have, you know, if I had a rough estimate, you know, maybe 70 to 75% full. And then we'll see things will be a little bit more sparse there. And some of the short shoots between turns, one and two and three and four. But it's going to be the largest single day, sporting event since the start of the pandemic last March. I just know even just coming from, you know, coming to practice and qualifying this past weekend that, it was both a great occurrence, you know, a great thing to see, a great sign that things are hopefully turning the right way in terms of where the country is with the pandemic. But it was also a little jarring, I think, at times just because we haven't seen anything like this in normal daily life in quite some time.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how people react. And but at least it's all outdoors. The weather's supposed to be good, so theoretically things should be pretty good. And for people that have been coming for a long time and were there when there were 350,000, what is the absolute max that was ever there? I always used to hear up to around 400,000 people. Do you think we ever touched that with an Indy 500?
Yeah, I think we did probably back in the I don't know when the true peak would have been, but you know, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I mean, you see some photos of the infield in those times, and it was just absolutely wild how many people they had packed in there. And they had even, you know, grandstands, I think, that held at times more than they do now. It was up around 250, and nowadays it's down around 235. So, yeah, I think probably in the, you know, maybe the 70s and 80s, maybe even the early 90s, that it's maybe true peak. In some ways, it was definitely up around 400,000. A good year now, I would say, is probably between, you know, 250, maybe around that 250, 250 to 300. 300 is probably a really good year. The year that we did hit what they call the sellout, right around 350,000 was the 100th running, and so it had a lot of history attached to it in 2016 that we won't have, you know, quite the same hallmark of for quite some time, but still have been showing some pretty promising numbers since then, last year and this year notwithstanding.
And I want to ask you a little bit about that. For people that don't know the history, I mean, Indianapolis has been the most famous race for I don't know how long, maybe forever, and it was insanely popular, as you said, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and then there was a split that the Kart Racing League was not owned by Indianapolis. That was the premier event on the schedule. But there was a little bit of, I guess, an ownership issue over the Indianapolis 500 wanting to have its own racing league because they didn't like the way maybe Indy was being treated as part of the whole series. And there was a split, and there were two racing leagues. And for a short amount of time, there was a race up against the Indy 500 where the most famous drivers went. I think you wrote an article, or one of your colleagues wrote an article just this week about that year in 1996. So the Indianapolis 500 suffered from that for some time. How much is it coming back? Is it regaining some of the glory that it, you know, NASCAR went through? I think that's another issue, is NASCAR went through the roof for a time, and that has cooled back off, at least it seems to me. So where does the Indy 500 and where does open wheel racing stand right now in the racing world?
Yeah, generally speaking, people say that IndyCar, you know, people that are in the paddock include in, say that it's on the up and up. It's certainly better, you know, than it was, say, 10 or 15 years ago, but it's been a really slow climb since that split that you referenced, that did start back in 1996. And I think, it's going to take something really miraculous probably to reach where we were back in those early 90s, where you had this, kind of like crossroads of some sorts, where you had the great of, the 60s and 70s, the AJ Foyts and Mario Andretti's, Gordon Johncox, Parnelli Jones, Tom Sneva, guys like that that either had just retired or were getting ready to, and you had the guys in their prime still, like Rick Mears, Michael Andretti, Bobby Rahal, and the start of some pretty great, if not maybe kind of short careers, like Jimmy Vassar and Ari Leyendyke and guys like that. It was just such this rich, talented, competitive, international, well-known across the world series. You had a guy like Nigel Mansell, who was a Formula One champ in the early 90s and actually left Formula One and came to IndyCar because he wanted another challenge. And you'd never see something like that today happen. I think that's maybe a good way to put it into perspective. I do think you're right. I think NASCAR has kind of been undergoing a little bit, I wouldn't call it an identity crisis, but they certainly have kind of been turning over their big popular names over these last 5, 6, 7 years or so. And a series like that is going to struggle when that all happens at the same time. IndyCar is kind of shaping up for something similar here in a couple years. They've got this really great crop of young talent that's maybe emerging a little bit earlier than NASCAR's has over the last couple years, and so you hope that that helps. You hope that these young guys getting recognized earlier, while these veterans that have held a lot of the name recognition now for two decades or so, like Scott Dixon and Tony Kanaan, and Will Power and Ed Carpenter and others are still around. You hope that helps, but I think we'll get a really good test year probably here in 5 or 6 years or so when these old experienced vets that fans know and have grown an attachment to do happen to step away and see if these young guys can continue not only to carry it at the level it's at now, but to build upon where it is right now.
We're speaking with Nathan Brown. He's the Motorsports Insider for the Indianapolis Star. Check out IndyStar.com. You can follow him also on Twitter at @by_NathanBrown. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about those names and the identity crisis that the Indy 500 has had, because those are a lot of names that even casual race fans would have known. AJ Foyt, Mario Andretti. Can you name an IndyCar driver right now if you're not somebody who pays attention to it, and what can they do about that? We'll talk about this next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN, talking about our coverage of the Indianapolis 500 here on WGN Radio. That's going to start at 6:30 a.m. on Sunday morning with Dane Neal. The race should start about 11:45 a.m. Central Time, but we'll have lots of coverage and lots of fun. Nathan, I don't know how much of the history you know, but WGN Radio in Chicago first carried parts of the Indianapolis 500 in 1924, one of the original stations that started with broadcast coverage long before the Indianapolis Motor Speedway radio network and things like that. So we're excited to have the race back on our airwaves this weekend. When we were talking a few minutes ago, you were mentioning all these names and the identity crisis, and the Mario Andretti's and the AJ Foyt's and the Unser's and Rick Mears, all those names from the heyday. And I was reading in the article earlier this week from the Star that part of the split back then was that Indy wanted to create more opportunities for American drivers. And that, you know, we don't have a lot of famous American IndyCar drivers. That's still an issue today. And is that still something they're working? And is that what Indy really needs, is a name, a Mario Andretti, to kind of capture people's imagination and bring people back to the sport?
I think that would go a long way. I think you've also got some pretty good names that could potentially do that. I mean, there's no one better than Joseph Newgarden. He's a two-time series champion, won two of the last four IndyCar titles in 2017 and 2019. And you've also got a much younger driver, Colton Herta, who just turned 22. He has won four races. He's the youngest IndyCar race winner in series history, won his second race at 18 years old back in 2019, if I remember correctly. And he's a guy who starts second in the Indy 500 on Sunday, considered a legitimate contender. He could be the youngest winner of the Indy 500 both this year and next year. And he finished in the top four in the championship last year, and is also considered a serious contender if he can right the ship a little bit. And certainly winning the Indy 500 in a couple of days here would pay lots of dividends to that. So I think you have a couple good options there, but they certainly have a long ways to go to really, I guess, you know, an IndyCar fan is certainly going to know those names, but I don't know that a general sports fan is necessarily going to know who Colton Herta or Joseph Newgarden are yet. And frankly, I'm not sure exactly what it's going to take to do that. I mean, you've got a guy like Scott Dixon, who's won six championships. Yes, he's not from the United States, but he's, you know, probably legitimately in conversations, you know, on the Mount Rushmore of the sport. He's won six championships, which is second all time. He's won 51 races, which with one more would be tied for second all-time in the series. And I don't know how many people, you know, outside this sport, outside the world of motorsports, really knows who Scott Dixon is, or maybe recognizes his name, but doesn't know how great of an athlete and how great of a champion he is. And so maybe that's a kind of a good barometer of where we're at. And I'm not sure what changes that exactly. I mean, IndyCar seems like they've got You know, they're trying lots of things. They're trying to be dynamic and electric in their marketing campaigns, and maybe it still takes a little bit of time as, you know, this new ownership kind of takes hold of the series and puts everything going in their direction that they want to see. Maybe it takes a little bit of time, you know, whether it's building momentum that way or building momentum through social media or, you know, a growing broadcast presence. The other thing that IndyCar really kind of lacks is any sort of shoulder programming like a video game or a Netflix show like Drive to Survive that Formula One has used to just grow in leaps and bounds here in the United States over the last couple of years. You've got folks who were never would have even considered turning a Formula One race on a Sunday morning who now make it appointment TV, and it's strictly because a Netflix show that they watched and they binged. And that's that type of programming and advertisement for your sport for something like this that's a little bit niche in lots of ways is really priceless, and it's something that IndyCar has not had and isn't really probably even quite on the forefront of having here in the next year or two.
We're speaking with Nathan Brown. He is the Motorsports Insider at the IndyStar, IndyStar.com for more. We're going to take a quick break, check the News Nation news, and then when we come back, it's funny, I was just going to say, Ted Lasso, they need a Ted Lasso. I might watch some Premier League soccer this year because of Ted Lasso. How does Indy recapture? And part of the problem is we're only excited about this Sunday. More next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Nathan Brown from the Indianapolis Star, IndyStar.com for more. I mentioned as we're going to the break, I don't know if you've watched Ted Lasso, Nathan, on Apple TV, but Jason Sudeikis is an American football coach who goes and coaches soccer in Europe. And it's funny, it's heartwarming, and it somewhat makes you want to like soccer. Even though a million youth soccer players every year has somehow not made soccer famous in America, the Indianapolis 500, the problem to me is, we're all excited about this one race, but, and I remember it used to be then the next week they would go to the Milwaukee Mile and there were other races and things like that. But, it seems like now it's really like there's this race and it's really famous. We all still love it, but then there's no like season that people are truly aware of. Are they working on building up more than just the Indy 500, or are they really trying to shore up the Indy 500 and then figure out how they can expand from there?
Yeah, it's a tough conundrum, right? Because it's like the chicken or the egg situation. Like, do you build up your series fan base and therefore have a bigger audience for your premier race like the 500, or do you build up the 500 and hope that some of those people stick around for races later on? And I think, you know, if I had to pick, I do think it's probably the latter. I think you just hope that through someone watching the Indianapolis 500, that they decide, you know what, this was such a cool sporting event to watch on TV, or this is such a cool thing to go and see in person that I want to, you know, tune in a couple weekends and watch the road race at Detroit, or I really like this oval race. I want to turn on this oval race at Worldwide Technology Raceway that's in August and remember to turn that on. So, I think that's the way you do it. I guess the problem is, you know, the Indy 500 has, at least for a couple of years before the pandemic delayed event last year, had, you know, a slight drop in your TV numbers. And I think a lot of folks kind of, tied that to the fact that IndyCar hadn't had a great, fluid TV package until they signed on with NBC at the start of 2019. So this was their third year with NBC and NBC Sports as their sole broadcast partner. Before that, the last decade before that or so, you had the 500 that was shown on ABC, and then most of the rest of the races, those seasons were split between NBC or NBC Sports, and you really struggled for that, you know, that person that's going to get attached to the sport in terms of a TV viewer struggling to know exactly where they needed to tune in for this race. They didn't have like one, or in some cases even two channels that they could turn to know that they'd find an IndyCar race on most weekends. And so I think hopefully you're starting to see that grow a little bit with NBC. Of course, they are in a contract year with NBC. That contract ends after this season, so they're in the midst of trying to figure out where they go next, whether it's with them or someone else. I do think staying with that partner who can continue to build upon what you've already done for the last 3 years, I think it personally is important for them and their growth. But it all will come down to the numbers, the dollar signs in some way, and potentially in some ways how this 500 here on Sunday goes in terms of TV viewership.
Yeah, that's interesting that they're in a contract year again. I didn't realize that. How many other races are in the IndyCar series right now?
Yes, you've got last several years minus the pandemic changed one a year ago. It's typically a 17-race calendar. A normal year would see the series start in mid-March, and you would you'd finish up by mid-September.
And how has sponsorship been for cars? I know that they generally can get it for the Indy 500. You'll see teams like just run that one race. And I know that, you know, through all the motorsports, there used to be a lot more advertising money flowing through. It seems like it's been tighter in recent years. Are the sponsorship packages working out okay? Are the teams doing okay with being able to get the equipment they need? This is not a cheap sport to run a car in.
Yeah. I mean, I think teams are starting to have a little bit more success. The grid has, I think, slowly grown over the last 4 or 5 years or so. You used to be around, you know, maybe 19, 20, 21 full-time cars, and you're up to 24 this year, and there was a lot of thought that there might be 25, and I think there's potential room for growth for next year. So I think that's a good sign of things. And compared to, like, say, the 90s or so, the cost to put together a full season program actually back then was for your really good teams was more like $13 million or so for a full time car. And now it's down around 7 or 8. So it's become more cost effective for teams. So you don't even have to pull in as much sponsorship to begin with, which is helpful to, allow some of these smaller teams to either A, grow, or B, just stay more competitive. The cars are all the exact same body. They've all got the same chassis made by Dallara. They've all got one of two engines from either Chevy or Honda. They all run the same tire spec with Firestone. And so it's a lot, so even the playing field out, which I think is great for someone, you know, that might be a prospective new team to want to come into the series, to join a series like IndyCar, because it's both a fairly cheap option in terms of a full season compared to a Formula One or a NASCAR Cup Series team. And you also can come in, and as long as you have the right personnel in line, I think you can come in with a pretty good level of confidence that that you can start to compete. Not necessarily you're going to immediately compete for wins, but you know, most well-established teams on any given weekend can come away with a win if the things turn the right way for them.
You mentioned the engines. It's been Chevy and Honda for quite some time now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And are they both pretty equal? I remember there was one year, I want to say it was the Chevys were not doing good, and people were very upset, and that's got to be tough for a manufacturer to have a bad year on the circuit. It makes them look bad. They're putting all this money into developing the engines and the glory, hopefully, that comes with that. When they're not performing well, that makes you look terrible.
Yeah, it always gets the most attention around the 500.
Sure.
Just because it's one weekend where it's kind of like all or nothing, and you know, there's only one team that's going to win, and so there's a lot of attention that's paid to the engine manufacturer that does come out to win. And last year in particular was a pretty dominant year for Honda. They had swept the podium, and so that's something that we don't probably pay a ton of attention to over the course of the season, because maybe in some way it tends to be fairly evened out, and we don't see a whole lot of discrepancy between the two, in recent years certainly. But it gets a lot of attention around the 500 because it's, you know, there's only one engine manufacturer that's going to win, and so that's a pretty big deal.
A little bit more with Nathan Brown from the Indy Star next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala back here with you on 720 WGN. One more segment now with Nathan Brown from the Indianapolis Star. Find his articles at IndyStar.com and reach Nathan at @by_NathanBrown on Twitter. With the changes to the cars that have happened over the years, most recently in the last couple of years, that cockpit has gotten closed. It's open wheel racing. It used to be pretty open cockpit, but the cockpit gets more and more closed off. Do you think that that affects, I'm sure it's all about safety, does that affect the sport at all in the way that the drivers are, you know, just the look of it has changed? It sort of, to me, become a little more European in nature, a little more F1-ish.
I wouldn't call the cockpit necessarily European style. I mean, because Formula One has always been that same open cockpit. And the IndyCar has almost kind of taken a step by closing that off. It's a safety device called the Aero Screen. And it's really actually played out to be pretty darn helpful and effective in the year and a half that they've used it so far. I think that can only help you in potentially attracting drivers like, say, a Romain Grosjean, who drove in Formula One for a decade and decided to come to IndyCar this year on road and street courses. Same with Jimmy Johnson, 7-time NASCAR Cup champion, who came here and is also doing the road and street courses this year, may potentially run an oval at some point. Guys like that who wouldn't traditionally maybe think of IndyCar just because of some of the safety concerns, those guys are starting to trickle over and give IndyCar a shot. And so I think that part actually probably helps them in some way, particularly because we've seen it in use and in action these last couple years.
So much has been made, and it's all we kind of talk about a lot of times with regular cars these days, is electric. Everything's going electric, and everybody's introducing these things. Is there ever a time where an Indy 500 is going to have cars that are running on electric?
It's a great question. We were actually with series owner Roger Penske for a sit-down with some media earlier this morning, and someone asked him that same question. And his answer was pretty fair and I think pretty spot on. Essentially said, you know, we're all about, you know, keeping up with, you know, the trends in society, which are increasingly pointing towards electric and trying to be more, climate conscious. And Penske Corp has taken a pretty big lead on trying. They actually announced today that they are not only attempting to become carbon neutral, but carbon negative. But that doesn't necessarily relate to IndyCar. I think with IndyCar in particular, you're always going to have that draw to the sound of the cars.
Yeah.
I think there will probably always be, certainly for quite some time now, there will always be a place for an internal combustion engine driven series. There, I mean, who knows? Maybe there's a time where you'd see, where an electric engine becomes, just one of the engine possibilities. If we get to more of a plurality of engine possibilities like they had back in the 60s and 70s, several decades back, that's certainly a possibility. I just don't think that this will ever go to, a full electric engine series, because there's still a lot of nostalgia with the sound and with just the energy that car and all that brings to a racetrack.
It certainly would be interesting to see them pulling into the pits, somebody with their electric or their gas engine refueling, and then somebody pulling up with the electric and they're putting the plug in and, you know, seeing how much it can charge up in 11 seconds while they change the tires.
Yes, it's a weird thing to think about. They've actually got a series running here. Not, I guess, I don't know that I'd call it a full series, but it's a race actually at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in October that they have these fully autonomous cars that are essentially designed as IndyCar chassis. They just don't have a driver in them, and they have a bunch of colleges from all over the world that have been working to put together programs and design cars and get everything lined up to actually compete on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in a race, I believe it's in October. So that's a very new, interesting thing that we haven't ever seen much of in racing in general, but certainly not at the, you know, the what people call the racing capital of the world.
Yeah.
And how that is received, I think, could be really interesting to see. But again, not something that I would necessarily expect to see in IndyCar anytime soon.
Yeah, no kidding. Fascinating. Fascinating to think about what will be and the great history of the Indy 500. We're looking forward to coverage starting Sunday morning here on WGN at 6:30 a.m. Nathan Brown from the Indianapolis Star. Where will you be during the race, Nathan?
I will be here in the media center at IMS and possibly down on pit lane. Just kind of trying to do everything I can to keep track and keep track of this race and have a nose to the ground on everything that's going on in those fast, wild, exciting couple of hours here.
It's definitely tough as a reporter because unless you just pick one thing to focus on, the track is way too big. There's too many. I mean, there's so many different angles of the story of the actual race, right? It's got to be hard as a reporter to figure out, okay, exactly what am I going to do here? Because I'm going to miss a lot no matter what it is. So I have to kind of figure it out, right?
Yeah, you kind of just have to, you can't really pick your spot too early in a race. You kind of have to just be, I mean, the best way to do it, unfortunately, is to be watching the TV monitor and be able to kind of see everything that's going on so that you can, you know, as the race gets down toward the end, you can start, you know, maybe pre-writing a story or putting the bones of a story together. But yeah, racing is unique in that way that anything can happen at the last minute. We've seen that in some 500s here over this last decade or so, and you really have to kind of keep an open mind and have a pretty good understanding of all the different drivers who are in contention there, because down the stretch, just about everyone might be able to pull something off.
Nathan Brown with the Indianapolis Star. Go to IndyStar.com to follow the coverage or follow him on Twitter at @by_NathanBrown. We really appreciate your time. Have a great time at the race this weekend.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
We'll get you into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up here on 720 WGN.